and welcome to the Metapod Podcast, the Pokemon podcast that revolves around the evolving meta, officially in full swing of the 2024 Pokemon TCG season. Sean, how are you? You're in a little bit of a different setting at this point to kick off the new year.
Yeah, I'm in a hotel room right now in Chicago. By the way, anybody out there in Chicago, if there are like good spots that aren't too far away to play Pokemon, hit me up on Threads. I've been to two places over the weekend and nobody showed up. But I don't know. Maybe these aren't the spots.
Are you bringing the Metapod playmat?
I have a single one with me. I didn't have the space to bring lots of extra
well,
stuff.
Well, no, what I mean is, like, when you're playing at these events,
yes.
Are you... Okay, I was going to say, because the people that usually recognize me, at least, at, like, NAIC and locals, it's because I'm using the Metapod playmat. They're like,
yeah,
yo!
So that's... Yeah, so, look, Chicago peeps, if you're listening, hit me up on Threads while I'm here for the week.
Hit Sean up on Threads, hit us up in YouTube comments as well, potentially, or maybe even a review if you want to leave a nice review on Apple or so. But Sean, the World Championships happened this weekend. We did do a little bit of commentating, a couple different videos. Sean and I tried our hand at some more professional level commentating. And let me tell you, I did... sports broadcasting going into college, so I have like somewhat of a background. Sean has more of a background in card game casting, but doing radio sports compared to video Pokemon cards, like I have like a basics down, right? I have the bare bones level of like broadcasting commentary, but it is so different. I mean, I knew it was going to be different, but like it was fun, don't get me wrong. But
yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, no, like it's definitely like it's a weird thing because especially compared to radio, like mm-hmm. normal sports is one thing. But radio, like Jake and I talked about this afterwards, like, you know, it's basically nobody can see anything. So you have to narrate every literal thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's always hard. I will say the hardest thing about Pokemon commentary or any card game is balancing what you would expect a knowledgeable player to recognize while mm-hmm. they're watching it with making it as accessible as possible for people who maybe aren't as enfranchised. That's really always the tension.
I just also want to shout out the commentators because watching someone like Tord or whoever, you know, play like really, really fast, you know, or flip through their hand of all their cards and just knowing and seeing exactly what is in their deck or seeing exactly what's in their hand. Like there was a lot of times where someone's like flip around their cards once super fast and then put it down face down on the table. And, you know, Chip Ritchie's like, all right, he's got rare candy. He's got psychic energy. He's got a Gardy EX illustration, like, and I'm like, yo, that's really fast. Like, and to do that in real time, that's like that's a huge respect. I mean, I've always respected the commentators. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but to see it in action, it was crazy. But World's Championships was very, very cool. And we will talk about some of the decks today. And again, just like we've mentioned in the past, the decks that we talk about for our podcast listeners, our audio only listeners, these decks will be on pokecard.io. The link is in the description or the show notes below if you want to visually see those deck lists as we talk about it or different things like that. There are so many cool decks that came out of this, Sean. We were like kind of right in a lot of our predictions. Some of them, we weren't totally off the ball when we did our tier list the other week, but there were definitely some surprises in there.
I mean, let's just say it right now. The fact that Mew VMAX, which we'll get into, won the World Championship, I don't think either of us would have predicted that.
Mm-hmm.
I think given, you know, Mew in general just sort of has seen like a slow decline in play, has sort of felt like maybe like it's super consistent, but maybe it's not going to like perform super well. Like if you high roll, great, but like how many people are going to high roll a tournament the size of Worlds? In reality, though, it's like it's almost the opposite. It was the Mew show in top eight.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would say for me at least, that was maybe the biggest miss that I didn't see it. Didn't see Mew being that dominant.
My biggest thing as well is Lugia not necessarily because Lugia dominated. Lugia did have some success, and we'll talk about it a little bit more as we get further into the podcast, but Lugia was the most popular deck day one, which shocked me. I mean, it wasn't by much. It was a pretty even field in terms of popularity and percentages. Like Lugia was 15% and the next deck was like 14 or 13. So it was like, it was pretty close in a field of 170 players on day one, but like so many people thought Lugia was the play. And honestly, I didn't expect to see a ton of Lugia coming into play. So that was just, in my opinion, that was the coolest thing. And that was like the most surprising thing as well.
Yeah, I think in all, as we go through the day two standings, like where it all netted out,
mm-hmm.
I think what you'll really see is like this format, it actually feels like, it, you know, there's always going to be issues with any given format, but this format feels very healthy, I would argue,
mm-hmm.
because I do think for the most part, there's like six decks, maybe seven decks that could go into any tournament. And with the right circumstances, that deck could come out on top, right? Like there is no, there's no clear like front runner deck. There are the good ones, but within that group, it's kind of, it's a coin flip, I think.
Exactly. And it really harps down on, I saw some people talk about this like on other podcasts and different like Twitter posts or X posts, whatever you want to call it, you know, different conversations that were going on the last couple weeks. People, a lot of people talking about, okay, I'm not going to Worlds, but what deck should I play like for this weekend, for example, this past weekend that we just had, if you didn't go to Worlds? And just most everybody that I heard have this discussion, a lot of people said just play the most comfortable deck. You know, if you, I think it was Michael Pramwat or something, Michael Pramwat, who, by the way, top four at Worlds this year, great player, spoiler, and also has like eight regional or major victories. I think eight regional wins. So very highly touted player since the beginning of the game. He's talked about that he's never really metagamed like a local tournament. He just plays what he wants to play, what he's most comfortable playing, and that's just what he does. And I think especially right now, as you were saying, Sean, there's so many like decks that can do well at different events. There's definitely great decks, but there's a lot of good decks that hold their own in the format. I think, again, if you're looking at this and you're like, oh God, what's the best play for this week at Locals or whatever, just play whatever deck you're most comfortable with. That's the biggest yeah. piece of advice I think that we can give in this podcast.
Jake, I know you wanted to get into the standings. I know you also mentioned that we had a quick review that you wanted to go through. Do you want to do that and then jump into these deck lists?
We do have a quick review. So as we mentioned earlier in our commentary kickstart to Pokemon TCG commentary, releasing the couple videos, some people did leave some really nice reviews and comments on those videos. So just again, want to hype those up on the YouTube channel, some extra YouTube content if you want. We did only post a couple rounds, and so I think this summarizes it really well. This person, Dark Blue Turbo, left, brilliant. It's like a highlights package. I don't have time to watch all the matches, so thanks for picking out specific matches for us to enjoy. And I do think the three that we did were really good matches. One of them, which I won't spoil which one it is or what the result was, but one of them we thought was going to end really quickly, and it turned out to be like a full game, really good set. So we've got some quality matches for you all on there.
Yeah. It was a little bit fortuitous because Jake and I were like, some of them actually we recorded like right when they were happening or right after they happened. So like mm-hmm. we couldn't know. And I'm sure there were lots of other great matches that, you know, we didn't hit. But I will say, like, in terms of what ended up being on stream at Worlds this year, I didn't hear of as many matches being streamed that ended in like ties.
Yeah.
That's been like a component in the past when there was like a lot of Lost Box or a lot of Guardy Lost Box stuff where just matches would always end in ties on stream. And that's just, to be frank, as a viewer, very unsatisfying.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't seem like there was a ton of that. Maybe that speaks to, again, last week we talked about the skill level of the players
mm-hmm.
being a little bit higher, the likelihood then of ties is maybe a little bit lower because people are very familiar with the decks and they're more experienced players. So I don't know. Who knows if that's actually the reality? But you know, it's a theory.
I will say going into the news, I kind of have this over. Looking at the standings, I mean, there's a lot of ties in here. You have four ties right here. This player's got two. This player's got two. This player's got two. Vance Kelly, the guy who won, got two, two, one. Some of these are IDs into Top Cut. You know, you have a three here, a three, another three. Just a ton of ties. There were a lot of ties in this format, but it ended up working out for a lot of people. And I mean, it was interesting, especially on the stream, because there weren't too many ties, I feel like, Sean.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's go into the... Oh, sorry. Do you want to say something real quick?
No. I was just going to say, like, yeah, let's go into it. Rock and roll.
Let's go into this top eight right here. We're going to be talking about Vance Kelly's winning Mew VMAX list. So congratulations to Vance Kelly on winning the World Championship. Sean, do you want to tell us a little bit about this deck?
Yeah, this is the Fusion Strike version of Mew that we discussed in the past. So you're playing Meloetta for some potential early game knockouts, if you can, like going first with Aliza Sparkle. Really powerful combination of cards here to get a quick start, but also great late game finisher with Meloetta if you need to stretch for a big knockout on a Guardi EX or anything that's like, you know, pretty beefy. You can stretch with Meloetta with those Fusion Strike energy, or even if you need to throw in a power tablet or two. It's just a better way to balance, I think, your resources than the double turbo only version of Mew. But that's generally the version. In terms of other aspects to these, you have an Aura Choreo in this list, which I don't know if it's always in the list, but you know, choosing to put that in the list, which I believe Aura Choreo reduces damage done to your Fusion Strike Pokemon by 20. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe it's 20.
So, you know, trying to maybe put a few things out of range. I think Aura Choreo might be useful in certain matches to protect. Primarily, I think it's protecting those Genesects from maybe a Guardi EX is doing 190, which is exact math. I'm sure there's lots of other situations that Vance might have put it in there for that I'm not aware of. But I would say that is a one slight variation maybe. Outside of that, though, it's a pretty standard Mew list. The stadiums are a little bit different, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
You do have two Lost Cities, one Path to the Peak, and one Crystal Cave. Crystal Cave allows you to, I believe it's heal damage from your Metal and Dragon Pokemon.
So it's meant for Genesect, yeah.
Yeah, so that is, I would assume that that's really primarily for like a Lost Box that's trying to set up, you know, knockouts on your Genesect. So like every turn you can just sort of negate some of that Sableye damage. And then the last big piece, and Jake, you turned me on to this. The last big piece here is Box of, is it Disaster?
Yes, yeah. Box of Disaster.
Jake, do you want to explain to everyone what this little tool card does?
Box of Disaster is a tool card. When you attach it to your Pokemon V and it is knocked out by damage from an attack, you put 8 damage counters on the attacking Pokemon. And so it is very impactful for things like the Gardevoir matchup specifically. You could also put something like this on a Genesect, right? And you can have it hit something like a Dragonite or Raikou, but it's primarily for that Gardevoir matchup, because Gardevoir, especially to hit the Mew VMAXs, they have to put a ton of energies on their Pokemon, whether it's Gardevoir or Zacian. And so using this Box of Disaster, that can help knock out a Pokemon. So even though you maybe give up 3 prizes, you're going to pick up 1 or 2 in exchange to help you a little bit with that prize trade. So very, very cool list. In my opinion, has a lot of different variety, proved to be very strong, was undefeated in day 2, and then went on to obviously win out top 4 and top 8 and the finals to become the champion.
Yeah, one note about Box of Disaster real quick. It only works if the Pokemon it's attached to has full HP, doesn't have any damage counters on it when it is knocked out. So it has to be a one shot. But exactly to your point, Jake, like, it's really, I think, there that eight damage counters. I'm trying to think of like what it's really there for. I guess eight damage counters, if you get knocked out, say, by a Tina, your Tina, right? Then that will put the Giratina down to 200, which puts it well within range of a follow-up knockout from UV Max. Also, obviously really good against Gardevoir. I think in the match between Vance and Tord Reklev, you could see how challenging it was for Tord to keep it in mind, to make sure to keep some resources for it. So, yeah, just that one little note.
It was very thrilling to watch the match. And I mean, it can help you in a lot of different situations as well, especially when you're facing Pokemon that have that one shot potential. And something that is like the Giratina, like you were saying, for example, you know, Giratina being a very popular pick in Arceus Tina and Lost Box Tina, it can just help you have less power tablets, right? So just a wide verse of uses for this, and definitely unexpected. We saw some rumblings of it with Arceus Goodra. That was, I think, really the only time that we've seen that card, but now it's a world championship card. So hope you grabbed your boxes of disasters earlier than that, Sean.
Yeah, not so much. Not yet.
I have mine, so I'm ready to go. I had gotten them at NAIC.
Jake, do you want to walk us through the man, the myth, the legend, Tord Reklev's pick coming up short, just second place? Still a great run, but walk us through his list.
Definitely an incredible run. Second place, Tord, now within the last three world championships, has two top fours, getting top four in 2019 and now a finalist in 2023. This Gardevoir list, pretty standard, I feel like, in a lot of different Gardevoir lists. Obviously, you're playing the Ralts Curlia Gardevoir line. You're playing a 2-2 of the Psychic Embrace Gardevoir and then Shining Arcana. You've got a Zacian in there, Greninja, Cresselia, Manaphy. Pretty typical, I feel like, with your VIP passes, Fog Crystal, Level Balls, etc., etc. Playing two reversal energies, I think that's one of the things to note, because reversal energy, a lot of people were playing around with one. A lot of people maybe didn't like it, either dropped it. I have not seen too many people playing two, but Tord feeling like it was an excellent call, and that it was in the tournament with those reversal energies. Kind of makes sense, because I feel like in Gardevoir, you constantly go down in prizes early. So it can really help you not only when, you know, you do get knocked out early, to be able to attach it right away to a Shining Arcana Gardevoir or something along those lines to help get a knockout in response. Because especially earlier in the game, you might not have as much in the discard, right, in terms of psychic energy to use Psychic Embrace. So that reversal energy can help you out. And then also, you know, just help you out in the late game. Stuff like that. It also is nice because, remember, Shining Arcana Gardevoir, drawing two cards if there's a basic energy attached to one of your Pokemon, or I'm sorry, just an energy. That was the whole point I was trying to make. Reversal energy works on Shining Arcana. So very, very interesting. It also works with Greninja if you want to as well, although most people I don't think do. Playing three rare candies in here is also kind of interesting, but I'm going to explain real quick why I think that makes sense. Because a lot of people would probably think, oh, wouldn't you want four rare candies? Because, you know, you've got two super rods in this list. You can constantly bring these Pokemon back. But with the three rare candies, the big card I think that really surprised a lot of people that he was playing, that I saw multiple people playing this weekend, was Mirage Step Curlia. Mirage Step Curlia was the maybe play of this archetype, in my opinion. Some people like it, some people don't, because it doesn't have the refinement ability, right? Which is very, very strong. But the ability it does have, or I'm sorry, it's not an ability, the attack that it does have is why it's worth playing. It has Mirage Step. Mirage Step for one psychic energy can put up to three Curlias on your bench as long as you have the space for it. And so this was really, really cool and made a lot of sense to me, because there are sometimes you don't hit battle VIP pass turn one, right? But more often than not, because you're playing such a high count of ball search, because you're playing such a high count of Ralts, you are probably going to have at least one Ralts in play after your turn one. And so going into your second turn, if you can evolve that Ralts specifically into the Mirage Step Curlia, right, and use Mirage Step, you can turn what was very much a subpar start into a pretty decent mid game, right, to really get your engine going. So it's a really good kind of like comeback card. Comeback doesn't sound like the right word to me, but it kind of makes sense, because like you have a bad start and then you come back in the middle of the game to have, you know, a pretty good board state. So it was really, really cool seeing this deck play out, especially by Tord, you know, who is historically someone who loves the refinement type abilities, you know, was huge on Zoroark and Trade. Same ability, different name. So really cool to see him pilot this deck like this and just be able to play it all out, Sean.
Yeah, the finals match, I will say, we didn't commentate that one, but the commentary on the match is great. I would highly recommend anyone who's interested who didn't watch it. The match by itself is uploaded on the Pokemon YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
Go check it out. It's genuinely like a really interesting match. I think I play a lot of Gardevoir, and even as a player who plays it, like Tord was like, he was making decisions that are not that different, but like they're different enough that I'm like, oh, I hadn't thought about doing that order of sequencing this way, or I never considered like getting out of this specific pickle this way, right? And you know, it speaks to his skill level, how much he plays the deck. But I will also say that Mirage Step Curlia does come up big for Tord in game two of that match, as Tord had, I believe, two Ralts prized, and one Ralts got knocked out on the second turn. So, yeah, without that Curlia, you would, you know, in that matchup, you would be left with one Ralts, no way to get any other Curlias out, and a decision to make, which is terrible. So with the Mirage Step, though, he was able to Mirage Step, attach the energy, get three Curlias out, and basically just be like, yeah, I don't need Ralts.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice. It's a nice to have. It's not a need to have. So it was cool seeing that card really used to the full extent.
It was also interesting because Tord is playing a Lost Vacuum. And so obviously we talked a lot about Box of Disaster in Vance Kelly's winning Mew VMAX list. And that Lost Vacuum right there, although it's not searchable, you just draw so many cards that you're probably going to find it. And when you do, and he can put away that Box of Disasters, it can really help him out in that specific tech card for that matchup. So really, really cool seeing that play out. Again, watch that finals match. It is very, very good in my personal opinion. And we'll just see how it goes in the future. The third place list, Sean's pick for the tournament. So close, Sean. So close. It is Michael Pramwant playing the Lost Tina. Now, this deck list showcase meta has just been wild the last 4 months. So a little bit different here, but we can still talk about this a smidge. It's a pretty standard Lost Box Tina list, I will say. A big thing about it is the Snorlax in there, the Thumping Snore Snorlax, Sean. That is the difference maker, I feel like, in a list like this, with that, I think it's called Thick Fat ability, stopping your opponents like Sableye and things like that. So very, very good in the mirror match, which, you know, Lost Tina was a deck that we hyped up, that was generally hyped in local events leading up to this tournament. So it makes sense why you would want to play a card of that sorts. And then the damage that it does with Thumping Snore, it just works out really, really well One thing that is super interesting to hear in this card as well, I think, so when you use Thumping Snore Snorlax, it goes to sleep and you have to roll two dice to wake it up, right? You have to hit heads on two dice. I think Pram three turns in a row hit heads. Or the three times he had to flip to wake up, three times in a row he hit heads, which is quite baffling statistically, I feel like.
Yeah, it was, I heard people talking about that, like, some, like, at like one of the places that I went by yesterday mm-hmm. or 2 days ago. Like, people, it's just, who does that? Who hits six heads in a row effectively to constantly not get punished when you have to stay asleep? But, interesting thing with this list too, though, is I think there are one, two, three, four. There's four jet energy in the list. So, mm-hmm. you know, just in case, Jake, you don't hit those heads, just in case you're not the luckiest human on the planet, you know, you can just attach a jet energy to something on the bench and then retreat that right away. And the Snorlax, it doesn't care. It's like, oh, I guess I'm awake now. Sorry about that.
I think it has jet energy. A lot of people have been bouncing around between three and four. And I think when you're playing the Snorlax, it makes a lot more sense for the reason that you were saying for that. But I think in general, I feel like it may be better than basic energies. We only see three water energies in this list, so there is the ability to use Radiant Greninja in this match. But I mean, if you looked at one of our stream games, there was Abyss Seeking, Giratina's first attack that was used a handful of times in different Lost Tina matches. So I think Abyss Seeking is used more often than a lot of people think in terms of the starting stages of the Lost Tina deck in order to get to 7, in order to get to 4, in order to get to 10, right? For the different attacks that Lost Box decks utilize. So I think that's very, very neat. And then also because you're not playing like a turbo build, right, of this list, you're not playing for Seal Stone, you're not playing the Lost Vacuums, you don't get to your numbers as high. So just jet energy, another jet energy is good because it's another switching out between your comp phase, right, to be able to, you know, get those numbers higher. So I think the deck has a lot of flexibility when it comes to those four jet energies, and I think it makes a lot of sense in that aspect.
Yeah, I don't, this is one thing where I don't play this deck very much and I don't encounter it personally too much, mm-hmm. but I would imagine there's a world in which this deck would consider playing double turbo energy. I know especially in the Arceus version, obviously you're going to play the double turbo, but I don't know, Jake, is double turbo a thing that might be played as like a two of, just because of needing to Lost Zone energy on Giratina's first attack?
There's definitely reason to put maybe one, I feel like, because your highest retreat cost in whatever is not Snorlax, your highest retreat cost is two on the Tinas, right? So having a double turbo energy when you're Abyss Seeking or something on Giratina, right? If it survives, you can retreat just from that double turbo, right? And you don't have to depend on the switch card. I will say, you know, you can also use Greninja on it, right? It's just another concealed cards option in there. But I don't think you would go any higher than one. I feel like Lost Tina lists in general are generally tight because you're trying to utilize the Lost Box engine, but fitting like a 4-4 line of Giratina or a 4-3 line or a 3-3 line or something like that. So it just... doesn't feel like maybe it would work, but who knows? Maybe you take out the choice belt on that Giratina and instead you go in with a double turbo energy. I don't know if you would take out a jet energy for it, but I don't know. Like, you could replace a jet energy and put a double turbo, but then I would stray away less from Snorlax. So then you'd have to change another card in there. I don't know.
I was just thinking out loud. I'm just like, I'm thinking about it and I'm like, I guess it doesn't matter because in most matchups, if there are really big Pokemon you only need to take two KOs with Giratina most likely in a match, and then you can clean up the other two prizes with Sableye. But in like a single prize matchup, or like in a matchup with smaller things, you're almost not even going to bother with Giratina until the late game, just to put a beefy thing out there. But you're really going to go Sableye heavy in those matches, so, and Snorlax heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess in that sense, double turbo is not really needed in this specific deck.
Yeah, it just also, like, if you put it on the Giratina for Abyss Seeking, and then all of a sudden, like, you can hit seven, right? You're almost forced to use the choice spell, because now you're not hitting for 280. So, like, if you have an Arceus V-Star in front of you, which is usually a popular deck, it wasn't that popular in this tournament, kind of surprisingly. Although, I think we kind of called that in our tier list, Arceus not playing too much of a factor, but now you're dependent on hitting the choice spell, which is not really a searchable card in there, and just a one of. So it might be a little difficult in that aspect.
Any other decks in the Masters division that you want to call out as particularly interesting?
I think, you know, obviously we talked a lot about the Mews, and, you know, Mew VMAX, fifth place with Dionysus Lee, Azul Garcia Griego winning, as we mentioned earlier, you know, Giratina V-Star right here. I assume that, yeah, Lost Zone Giratina making a couple one, Toolbox Kyogre, Guardi EX, took a majority of the top eight. The deck that did get ninth, though, that I thought was one of the coolest decks to come out in this, Cyrus Davis. The winner, did we showcase?
I think so, yeah. I think
one of her games.
Was this one of the matches?
I can't remember. Yeah. Anyways, Cyrus Davis, the NAIC champion, I think we did showcase one of her games with this list, ended up playing this Palkia Chin Pao deck, and it's specifically a Palkia deck, Cyrus did mention, not a Chin Pao deck. This deck, especially if you watch the VOD, you watch our commentary, was very heavy on the Palkia V and V Star. And I've played some games with it since the showcase, and since Cyrus posted this on Saturday morning, Eastern time. Very, very cool list. And yes, Palkia is very, very nice. Cyrus did say that they played Canceling Cologne on day one. If you're wondering, if you do the counts and why is there 61 cards in this, Cyrus played Canceling Cologne on day one, but day two switched that Canceling Cologne to the Wild Freeze Articuno. So she said that you could use either one. It didn't necessarily matter. A lot of times, they both have their pros and cons, and neither one is necessarily more valuable than the other. But Sean, this is a really cool list. Do you want to talk a little bit about this list, since we did get to commentate it? We do have some insight, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, this list is, as you said, it's a Palkia list, first and foremost. There are two Chen Paos in the list. I think those are there for primarily searching out your energy, right? Because one of the things that Palkia sort of wants early in the game is it wants to get some energy into the hand, so that it can discard it with whatever means it needs to turn on Melanie, to turn on the V-Star ability, etc. So if you can have a Chen Pao early grabbing you this energy, that's great. And then in the late game, or in the mid, whatever state you need, there is a world in which I think Chen Pao can come in handy if you need to reach for a really big KO on a specific turn. If you happen to either have played it out or set up in such a way that you'll have a lot of energy on board, you can use a Chen Pao maybe once. But I don't see Chen Pao being used as an attacker more than once in many games, just because there's no way to really accelerate a lot more energy once you've used your V-Star power. But I will say, super nice here in that you have the Melanies, so you can sort of chain Palkias together even if you don't have any energy on board.
Mm-hmm.
So that engine remains very consistent. Irida, just a great card, which enables things like Cross Switcher. So this deck is playing for Cross Switcher, which is like, yeah, Irida, grab Palkia V-Star, grab Cross Switcher, go. next turn, get another cross switcher, free boss's order type thing. So outside of that, playing water does give you the option to Radiant Greninja, both as an attacker and as a draw engine. Playing a 1-1 line of Bibarel, always really good in a deck that maybe prefers utility supporters like Irida rather than straight draw engine supporters. And like you said, like, you know, you have Canceling Cologne, you have Articuno. I think those are there probably for a couple of reasons, but I think the main thing is trying to get around Manaphy shenanigans. If you can kill a Manaphy, or if you can bring the Manaphy up, Canceling Cologne and Radiant Greninja all on the same turn, that is very useful to, like, take out setup Pokemon and the Manaphy all at once. I think we saw that maybe in one of Cyrus's matches, so she was able to actually pull that off. Outside of that, though, like, the Lost City helps you, I think, in the Lost Zone matchup, which might be a little awkward for this deck otherwise. But a pretty straightforward Palkia list. It again, I think it shows the power of a two-attachment attacker that can do pretty decent damage.
In a, like, bench-heavy format. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And all the versatility that only needing two energy sort of affords you. To be like, oh, well, I don't really need to build a whole energy acceleration engine into this deck. I'm fine. I can have space for an energy search. I can put space in for cross switchers and use Irida as my main supporter. So it's very cool.
It's very interesting as well. You know, you were talking a little bit about the Chin Pao's and their versatility and their use in this compared to what we've seen in Chin Palace as of late. And I would agree with you on, like, everything that you said. You know, it's just for taking a big KO or a nice KO, especially, you know, if, like, Lugia V-Star, for example, you know, you come up against a Lugia V-Star and they only have one Lugia on the field. You know, they probably don't have a lot of bench, so Palkia is not going to be the Pokemon that can take a KO there. So if you're able to, you know, Star Portal, get a bunch of energies on, like, the Palkias, and Chin Pao only needs four to knock out a Lugia V, because V-Guard energy math doesn't matter. I mean, it wouldn't anyways, because it's... Or no, it would matter if it counted, but it doesn't count. So you can get around that and take that knockout and pretty much win the matchup. I wouldn't say that it's 100% guaranteed, but, like, you've got a really good shot if you KO their only Lugia on, you know, the turn before they want to use Summoning Star, right? And they don't have anything else left in the field. So very, very cool. Also, huge shout out to the coolest card in this deck, the first edition Fossil Energy Search. It is a legal card in format. I bet a bunch of people didn't even know that legal or energy search was legal in this format. I believe it was printed in Scarlet and Violet base set. So get your Fossil first edition.
Your first edition energy.
Yeah, because they might go up a little bit in this setting, but... Again, very, very cool card. If only they were playing first edition base set Switch as well. That would just be the pinnacle of the deck, in my opinion. But a really, really cool list. You can also get this deck super cheap. I feel like this is probably one of the... I mean, the thing about this World Championship was that the decks were so cheap, right? Mew VMAX is like a $30 deck. It was in a Battle Arena deck, right? Chin Pao just came in a new deck that just came out, pre-made deck, that I believe has a Bibarel in it, if not. Palkia has a previous Battle Arena deck, right? You can get all of, like, Lumineon was in a Trainer's Toolkit. Like, you can get all of these cards for so cheap, I feel like. So, very, very cool coming out of these World Championships. And again, huge testament to Pokemon lately in the last 2 years. On the competitive products that they've put out has just been next level in terms of, like, pre-pandemic, I feel like, Sean.
Yes, indeed. Jake, do we want to touch on the seniors and the juniors winners as well? Because I know that you, while your prediction may not have come fully to pass, you did get a consolation prize there, I suppose.
Not only my pick, Lost Box Kyogre, did make top 8, which I feel like is pretty good. I did have a prediction that Lost Box Kyogre would win Worlds. So if we're talking about Masters, That obviously did not work. But we never clarified what division it was in, because Lost Box Kyogre did win juniors. It did win junior nationals. And what did they play against? Does it show on the...
I don't know what they played against, honestly.
But you can check links below to see lists for those of juniors. Oh, yeah. It does have it on there. I did not see that.
Arceus V-Star.
It doesn't have the list, but yes, played against Arceus, Duraludon, Umbreon in the finals and did really, really well. There were some things I know a lot of people don't like, you know, necessarily as much watching juniors and seniors, but I want to give a huge shout out, and Ross, the Wasi, did an excellent job in his commentary of shouting Xiao Tong out in terms of playing this deck, because Lost Zone Kyogre is very difficult to play, and you don't see a lot of juniors especially playing decks that require this precise of sequencing. Yes, thank you. Just thinking so many turns ahead and strategizing, because not only are you doing regular Lost Box things that have a lot of decisions, you're also preparing and managing your resources for that end game, you know, using that Kyogre to finish out a game. So very, very cool to see, you know, Xiao Tong win with this. I know, like, kid was literally crying after, so happy, and it was so wholesome and wonderful to see. Seniors was a surprise, maybe not a surprise to many, because Gabriel, I'm not 100% sure, Fernandez is a well-known player in the Twitter community, and won with Lugia in the seniors division. Very, very cool, in my personal opinion, Sean. And Lugia, in my opinion, and I think you can agree to this, biggest surprise of this tournament, for us at least. I think a lot of players had the right idea with it, but this Lugia list, very interesting as well. We've seen Lugia lists, and I think one of them that we commentated, playing a Squawkabilly EX instead of Professor's Burnett. So not doing that in this build, but playing two cards that I don't think a lot of people were playing in Lugia. Four cards a lot of people weren't playing in Lugia, Sean. It is the Pokemon first, Weirdeer V and Slaking V. Do you remember what those cards do, Sean?
I definitely remember Weirdeer. It's a card that I've always wanted it to, like, be good since it came out, because it has an ability that when you move it from the bench to the active, you can move any number of energy attached to your Pokemon onto it. And its attack, I believe, does 40 damage for each energy attached. So double turbo actually counts for two. Granted, the double turbo would reduce the damage by 20. But look, the point is, you're going to put a bunch of energy onto this guy, take one really big knockout, particularly in the late game, when that's the last thing you need to do. Because once you've loaded this thing up, the energy's kind of... it's kind of useless to you in every other scenario, but I will say it's an interesting situation of, like, if you're able to knock something out using the Weirdeer, like, are you loading up extra energy with your Archeops on all your Pokemon, knowing that Weirdeer might come down next turn, which is, I think, very different than the way that Lugia typically plays, but that's Weirdeer. Jake, do you want to tell us what Slaking V does? Because I know that last time we were talking about it, Justin Basil,
yes,
I should really, he was correcting us, I think rightly so, for the value that Slaking offers.
And it's interesting too, I wouldn't have expected it in Lugia, but it does make sense, and we'll talk about more why it makes sense later. But Slaking V has the ability kind of lazy. If you have exactly 2, 4, or 6 prize cards remaining, this Pokemon can't attack. So very, very interesting. And you may think, like, oh, there's a lot of two prizers in this format, right? With, like, Gardevoir and stuff. And, you know, Mew, potentially you can get stuck in that as well with a Mew VMAX and a Meloetta, or, you know, hitting a Genesect. But this list specifically, which does make sense after you Summoning Star and the reason that you put Slaking down in the first place, this list plays two Path to the Peak, Sean. Lugia playing Path to the Peak now. acknowledging that Mew could be a really good deck, acknowledging that
Gardevoir is a really good deck.
Yeah, Gardevoir is a really good deck. Acknowledging as well that maybe in a Lugia Mirror, right, if mm-hmm. you go first and Summoning Star, you could slap down that path, right? Prevent your opponent from using a Summoning Star. So a lot of cool stuff in this, doing a 2-2 split of Collapse Stadium and Path to the Peak. Very, I mean, this deck was sweet, Sean. I really enjoyed watching Lugia. I really enjoyed watching this deck play out. I don't know if it survives going into Obsidian Flames, but it's just really cool overall, in my opinion.
I will say the other two cards that I think you mentioned that were interesting is probably the Snorlax here. Because mm-hmm. this version, for the listeners who can't see the deck list, this is a colorless only Lugia. It does not have single strike anything.
Yes, so, yes. That was important to note that I forgot.
Yeah, so like, okay, well, you think colorless only, like, well, how many good attackers do you have? Well, you can play the Snorlax, the one that we were talking about earlier that puts itself to sleep after it attacks. But because you're playing the colorless version of Lugia, you can go grab the new Therapeutic Energy as well. And Therapeutic Energy has the effect of this Pokemon basically recovers from all special conditions, I think it is, between turns or can't be affected, blah, blah, blah. Basically, that Snorlax doesn't stay asleep. That's
it,
the point.
I mean, it is just so cool to see like how all of this, I mean, just again, seeing this in action. And it does say attached recovers from being asleep, confused, or paralyzed and can't be affected by those status conditions. So still can be burned, but you're probably not as worried about the burn. So very, very interesting as well. Playing the Pumpkaboo also. So I mentioned, you know, preventing your opponent from using a Summoning Star or something. You can slap a path down turn one if you're playing against like a Mew VMAX and you're afraid of a Donk. And then therefore you can just, you know, go grab Pumpkaboo. You are playing a 4-2 line of Ultra Ball, Nest Ball, plus 4 Capturing Aroma, so plenty of opportunities to go get a Pumpkaboo. Well, actually, you don't want a Nest Ball Pumpkaboo because that wouldn't work. But anyways, yeah, you have, you know, a bunch of possibilities to go get that guy and naturally draw into it potentially. So you can then use the Summoning Star, you know, on your second turn. So, I mean, just very, very cool. And if you kind of look to over on, oops, if you kind of look at these, actually, wait, it would be better this way. In the replies of their matchups that they played, you know, you look at this, you know, Arctina Klefki might be a little, I mean, that's a little bit more tough, I feel like, potentially. But Single Strike Lugia, win-win. Lost Boxtina, win-win. Kyogre, win-win, win-win. A lot of these are just win-wins in the matchup. Yeah. So only dropping 1, 2, 3, 4 games. Yeah,
well, I guess, yeah, yeah. The Arctina Klefki was probably, I guess, pretty rough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But dropping just very few games in general, you know, in terms of all of the games that they played out, not just the series, the rounds, but the best of threes inside of them, didn't lose too many games. And Gabriel Fernandez is a very, very good player. I think first year in seniors, potentially. It's either his first or second, because his brother is going to be in Masters next year, Vinny Fernandez, who I think we've talked about previously on this podcast at one point or another. Anyways, very good players from Brazil. But that was pretty much, like, in my opinion, all the decks that I wanted to talk about, Sean. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? There was an Aggron VMAX that was played. That was really cool on stream. Yeah.
No, I don't have any other decks that I want to talk about. We do have some exciting news, though. Every single Worlds, for those of you who aren't familiar with how Worlds typically goes, every year they always have an announcement or two at the end of Worlds, at the closing ceremonies. And typically that will include where Worlds is going to be the next year. And, you know, this year is no different. Jake, where will you and I be traveling? I have no idea if we're going, but where could we be traveling next year if we go to Worlds?
Pokemon Worlds 2024 is in Honolulu, Hawaii. So very, very cool. A lot of people predicted that Worlds was going to come back to the States, and Worlds in Hawaii, I believe, was in there in 2012. I think is when the last year it was in Hawaii. It's been there before. It's going to be there again. Hawaii, you know, a very popular city for tourists. So we will probably get dates around the venue and what days they exactly are in January. But if you're trying to plan ahead and things like that, it should be around the same time as it was this weekend or second or third weekend of August. So very, very cool. Hawaii. Say, yeah.
Worlds, I believe, was the location of the very first ever Pokemon competitive championship.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Back in the Wizards of the Coast era, I think in 1999 or 2000, they also held like a, I don't know if it would have been called Worlds at the time, completely different, you know, situation. I don't even think that they played with Japanese players. But yeah, so yeah, also a little bit of history there. I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, that's what the situation was.
Remember also, we won't dive into too much, but this was probably planned years in advance. I know there's a lot of things going on in Hawaii, so definitely if you are worried about that and stuff like that, please go donate, do whatever you can to help out over in Hawaii. This was planned years and years ahead, and as someone who's an event manager, it is not easy to change plans less than a year out, especially for a venue of an event of this size. Oh wait, it's got the past Worlds here. So yeah,
it doesn't go back all the way to 2000. Yeah.
So
it'll and then it was Kona, Hawaii in 2010. And
it'll be the fourth time being in Hawaii, but the first time in Honolulu, seems like.
Yep, I think you know, obviously the folks in Europe, I've heard rumblings that they're like, come on, why?
You just had Worlds.
They did
in
have
London.
This
Come on.
This is true.
Even for Americans, like Hawaii is a little difficult.
Third
year in a row that it's a slightly difficult. We did get lucky though. DC, Nashville, Anaheim, San Francisco, Boston. Like, we got pretty lucky before we started going international as of recent, but we've had a lot. We've had like 6 years in a row of world championships in recent mind in the States. So, but yeah, Sean, there was one more announcement that was part that I think is exciting a lot of people, including myself, and I think you too, Sean, judging by your eyes that you're making into the camera. New card mechanics are coming out. There are several that were announced. First, ancient and future Pokemon. For those who don't know, in Scarlet and Violet, spoiler alert, there are paradox Pokemon in these games, or Pokemon from different eras of time that come based, because the game is based around like time. You know, like you get Pokemon that were in the past and have evolved to what we know of today, or maybe Pokemon what we know now evolve, you know, the natural state of evolution, evolve to different Pokemon in the future. And so ancient and future Pokemon are coming in. They're very, very cool. That's the labels that they have. This means there will be certain abilities, trainers, and attacks that enhance them. I'm thinking of this as like battle styles, right? The different battle styles stuff, you know, rapid strike, single strike, and I don't know what fusion strike equivalent would be in here, but at least we have, you know, the one and the two, the ancient and the future, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, it's labeled exactly in the same way. Like, it's on the top right next to the images. It's got like, it either says ancient or future on the cards. I also think one thing to, I don't know the exact naming nomenclature, but like, there was like the ancient traits back in the day. So it may also be hearkening back to a little bit of that mechanic wise. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what exactly the theme between all of these is, because, you know, if you're a card game designer, do all ancient style Pokemon follow a similar theme? You know, for the battle styles, for Rapid Strike, the theme was damage spread, damage, you know, energy acceleration, and deck search, whereas Single Strike was like big damage with one hit, and then Fusion Strike was basically just Mew. That's the theme.
Mew, yeah. Mew Genesect, yeah. Like, that was it, you know. But very, very cool. They did reveal some cards, as you're, as you know, we're looking at on screen. Some of them not too bad. So this Screamtail right here, Sean, has a psychic energy or psychic colorless attack, 90 HP. It's levelable basic. This attack does 20 damage to one of your opponent's Pokemon for each damage counter on that Pokemon. So that could, I don't know, that could be pretty interesting, I feel like. So start putting your Manaphys back in your deck when this set comes out in Paradox Rift. I think some of the other interesting ones in here, was it this one? We do know that there are some other items that haven't been revealed that will be, because if you look at Brute Bonnet, this ancient Pokemon, it has an ability that says once during your turn, if this Pokemon has an ancient booster energy capsule attached, it'll make both active Pokemon poison. So there's a tool card, it sounds like, or maybe it's an energy card, who knows, but there's another energy that's coming, and it says in ancient booster energy capsule. So I wonder as well if that means that we're going to get multiple different types of ancient booster energy capsules. Maybe of like different colored energies, or maybe it's just there's one card and that's just the correct grammatical way to say that.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Who knows what it is, right? It might be an energy. It could be a tool card, because, you know, they did change the rules around tools. So maybe they're now exploring making tools a little bit more interesting or powerful in certain ways. But this one is interesting because the ability to simply poison both active Pokemon, creating a status condition just on a benched Pokemon's ability is, I think, really an interesting mechanic to bring back, because then you can start to play with, okay, well, what Pokemon are hitting 10 damage short, right? Because then poison can clean it up. Or what Pokemon are, you know, really need status conditions to hit a little bit more. So it's exciting to, I think, see this come back, because we talked about Jake Claydol, right? Mm-hmm. And Trevenant. This is actually really good, because you could put this with Claydol, blow up your Claydol, and then have them both be poisoned. It doesn't matter if the Claydol's poisoned, the Claydol's going to die anyways.
Exactly.
Right? And then that last poison is just going to take out the Pokemon for you. And you don't have to promote a single prizer like Trevenant. You can promote a giant wall.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this excites me, this Pokemon.
It's really interesting, too, that it says both active Pokemon, kind of like you were saying. You know, there's a lot of different combinations that you can play around with that. But if you want another effect that just knocks out Pokemon, there was a Roaring Moon EX for 2 dark and 1 colorless energy. It does Frenzied Gouging. Knock out your opponent's active Pokemon. If your opponent's active Pokemon is knocked out in this way, this Pokemon does 200 damage to itself. So not exactly like Claydol, because Claydol knocks itself out. Roaring Moon puts it with 30 damage left. And I've seen some people say play Emergency Jelly on this Pokemon, which I don't think heals it all the way. I don't think Emergency Jelly heals it all the way. It's only just like a little bit. So I don't know if that math would end up working out or whatever. It is weak to grass, which to just... keep playing these dark cards that are weak to grass, you know, Charizard, Roaring Moon, so that I can play my Toadscruel, Sean. But
yeah,
very, very cool. And then a Calamity Storm for more damage with a stadium in play discard. Another card. So we've seen Lugia, right, discards a stadium off an attack. We've seen Pidgeot discards in its stadium off an attack. And now Roaring Moon discards a stadium off an attack. I feel like the game right now is trying to, I wonder if something like Chaotic Swell is going to come back.
You know, that is, I think that's a good possibility, just because discarding a stadium, it may also be, Jake, that they are trying to encourage people to play stadiums, because I will say there was an era where very few decks were playing stadiums. So, but, you know, and then after that era, they sort of, because, you know, stadiums, they give you some utility, but they also take up space in your deck that could be used for lots of other things. So then they started printing things like Path to the Peak and Power Plant at the time, which is Path to the Peak for GX.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just wonder if, yeah, they're trying to encourage people to play more stadiums, and so they want to create attacks that now interact with that game design change, but who knows?
It's very curious as to what they're doing in the future, but that wasn't all that they announced in terms of cards coming back. It was also announced that the A-Spec mechanic is going to be coming back as well, Sean. So A-Specs were cards that first came out in 2012 off of Boundaries Cross, and they were powerful item cards that were limited to one per deck. We were not told anything other than that, whether it's going to be reprints, entirely new cards. I've seen a lot of people get excited because they want something like Computer Search brought back. We've talked about this on the podcast before about how these cards are so good in like Expanded or just really all the time. I mean, these A-Spec cards are so good. Almost every deck played some sort of A-Spec card, but especially if you went to Expanded before, you know, the pandemic shut everything down and they stopped having Expanded events. You know, I can recall at least one person, Azul, right, who got, I think it was a game loss for having a marked card, and it was just that his Boundaries or his Computer Search from Boundaries Cross that was printed in 2012 was so old that the natural warpage of the card just made it a marked card, and he couldn't really do anything about that. But he, it's his only copy because it's like a $45 card. So like it's
yeah, I was going to say it's because of the way the foiling was done on mm-hmm. those specific cards. Like older other foil cards from that era don't curl quite the same way, just the A-Spec. So we don't have any details yet on what those cards will be, just that the mechanic of A-Spec will be coming back. However, it wouldn't surprise me if maybe the two A-Specs that are the most popular, particularly Computer Search, but I do believe Dowsing Machine also sees play in Expanded.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that like I could see them maybe reprinting those cards if there's a desire for the Pokemon Company to bring back Expanded in any form. Because then it's like, okay, well, if we want people to actually play Expanded, we don't want to ban these cards. And so we can't have people playing decks with a bunch of cards that are not legal just because they're old and were foiled weird, right? So I could actually see them maybe reprinting the most popular ones for Expanded and then just bringing them back to Standard too as a way to say, hey, play with these versions.
It'll be interesting to see where the future of the Pokemon trading card game is going. I hope they play around with a couple different ideas because I know and I'm trying to remember exactly which one it was, but there was an A-Spec that was around that didn't really see much play at all, but it was specific for a Pokemon. I think it was Justin Bean that had posted it in a thread on Twitter of like, which A-Spec do you want to see come back? And it was something along the lines of like, if you attached it to Victini V. Oh, here it is. So it's called Victory Piece. It says if this card is attached to Victini EX, it can use its attacks regardless of the amount of energy attached to it. So basically, you know, you attach it to a Victini and it could attack for free, a Victini EX specifically. So I hope that Pokemon maybe uses an A-Spec like this with a future Pokemon. I don't know exactly mm-hmm. which one it would be. Probably not one that's insanely broken already, but maybe could have a little bit of value and could be played if it had a tool card of this type. Because I do think something like that would be really cool to make like different cards playable, to make like a bigger pool of meta mm-hmm. decks. So I think there's a lot of potential in something like that. So I'll agree with Justin Bean on that.
Yeah, I will be interested to see too if A-Specs are limited in like, because you know, in the past, I think A-Specs were always items.
Mm-hmm.
because we didn't have tool cards in the same way that we do now, obviously. But I could also see them experimenting with A-Specs as tools, either in addition to items or instead of items, because it's harder to search a tool out of your deck than it is to search an item. Because Irida can get you an item, but only Arvin. Only Arvin.
And Town Store, the new stadium in Obsidian Flames, Sean.
You know, you are right. I have not pulled one of those, so I have not seen one. So yeah, maybe not now. Because a stadium it's still, letting you get
I mean, there's
wild.
A lot of good stadiums in format that you want to play. I mean, we have Artisan, we have Path to the Peak, yeah. Like Lost City is still really good, Collapse Stadium. So maybe in some nicher decks, if you're not playing Arvin, you'd want to play that. But there was something else I wanted to say, and now I can't think of it. And I'm slightly upset because I was like, I have a really good... Oh, yeah. So I do think that there's a possibility that they'll play around with A-Specs on different types of cards, you know, like item cards, tool cards. Because if you remember Prism Stars, the kind of cards that came around like during Lost Thunder in like 2018, I think it was 2018, 2019. The Prism Star cards were on stadiums. They were on supporters. They were on Pokemon, right? Prism Star Ditto. Please make an A-Spec Ditto. Please. I'm begging Pokemon, so much. Gone 0 days without mentioning reprinting Prism Star Ditto. on the Metapod podcast, 0 episodes since, but
yeah,
I could see them utilizing A-Specs for a ton of different mechanics, but I could also see them limiting it, right? Because they just announced the new gimmick of like the battle styles, right? The Paradox Pokemon, you know, so it wouldn't surprise me if instead of having two different gimmicks that bring out a wide range of different cards that it could be, if they had one that was wider and one that was smaller. And I think A-Specs, because they're more similar to like Radiance, right? I do think that's going to be a little bit smaller. So it also wouldn't be super surprising if they just limited it to like tool cards or item cards.
Hey, look, they could start one way and then, you know, you could print them for a whole year in every set, and then you start with just items, right? Reprint computer search, reprint dowsing machine. Oh my God, it's the most amazing thing in the world. And then next set, hey, here's a supporter card that's an A-Spec. What? Do you want to play the supporter or do you want to play computer search?
Or do you want to play
if
Ditto?
If it's good enough. right. Yeah. But it's like, if it's good enough, maybe. Like, I would love to see an A-Spec version of Rare Candy Jake that you can play on turn one.
Or when you play a Pokemon down right away. It's kind of like a Wally or a Bushake, but like doesn't end your turn.
And it doesn't end your turn.
Yeah, and it's just like an item card.
Oh, Jake, that would be
I don't know. I feel like this format, I don't know if I would want that.
You can't do it with Charizard.
I don't know. I don't know if I want that. I don't know if I want that in format.
But if you did an A-Spec that was a more easily searchable card that said, on your first turn going first, you can play this card and do that, I'd be down with that.
I don't necessarily hate it. The thing
it
that...
It stops, like, the problem of going second. Because if you go second, you put your dude down, right? Your opponent's going to be able to evolve, probably attack. Whatever you leave in the active is just dead most of the time if you go second. And I think that would be a nice way to like say like maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know, because I think about somebody evolving into Charizard right away, like on turn two, and just kind of doing really well. I think it would have to be limited to Charmeleon. Like maybe. If it's your first turn in the game and you're going second, I think it has to limit. I think because the format with the stage twos and stuff and the evolutions being so good, I think you have to limit it from a basic to a stage one. I don't think it should work for like a V to a V max or a V to a V star. I think I have no data on this. This is my first time ever thinking about this possibility, right? We did not talk about this before we recorded this. My initial knee jerk reaction is like, only having it for basic to stage one. That's it.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, look, it's one of those where, like, I there's a lot of exploration space that Pokemon can do, like we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So if you give me just, if I can only put one of this entire kind of card in my deck, it better be good, mm-hmm. Pokemon.
Just think about how better Gardevoir gets if it's able to, on turn one, maybe get like two VIP passes and then use that rare candy to get a Curlia and Refinement on turn one.
I mean, that's pretty dope.
That's You're insane. Right. I mean, maybe it doesn't help out that much because it's just two cards, but like, it would definitely be the inclusion in the deck, as so long as, you know, there's nothing else that's like absolutely insane.
Yeah. Jake, I think it's time.
That's going to be all for this episode of the Metapod Podcast, the Pokemon podcast that revolves around the evolving meta. Coming up next week, we'll talk about some of the early decks. I've been playing around with a bunch of different decks and building a bunch of different decks on PTCGL, so we've got a bunch to tell you about what you can start playing at your local leagues as it's becoming legal for cups, challenges, things of that nature. So thank you so much for listening. I'm Jake, that's Sean over there, and we hope to see you again in the next episode. Peace.